It swings back and forth, the pendulum of MotoGP. Welcome to episode 660 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. First of all, small apology. As you probably noticed, we didn't get an Italian Grand Prix episode out last week. You may have seen it on our social media pages. Sadly, Cameron Buckley, who is our beloved biking co-host, was a little bit on the ill side last week, so I didn't want to put his voice box under immense strain by making him do a 50-minute podcast. But he's back now, so we're going to catch up a little bit on the Italian Grand Prix, but mostly focus on the Hungarian Grand Prix that we had last weekend at Balaton Park. I know, we're skipping most of Mugello to get to Balaton. That sounds like hell, frankly.
This is the worst possible timeline. Hello, everyone. You might still be able to hear, I still have a little bit of it going on, but I'm okay. Mark Marquez's right arm gets to, let's say, 70%, and the Wonder Weapon rift flares in the distance.
Yeah, that more sounds about right.
At that point, at this point, the right side of his body is more machine than man. It's like that old Danny Pedrosa graphic.
It's the scene from Terminator 2 where Arnie just rips off his entire right arm skin to reveal the skeleton underneath. Yeah, that's exactly what this is. We're getting the spare arm out of the safe. So yeah, that more or less sums it up. But we'll be catching up a little bit on the Italian Grand Prix, as mentioned, but we're going to be focusing mostly on Balaton Park, where Marc Marquez would make more history, not just for himself, but for the factory Ducati team. Jorge Martin rewrites history by recreating his crash from Japan and some of the back and forth to go with that. And there's a lot of political dialogue as well, because there's going to be a lot of changes for MotoGP next year beyond the obvious, hey, these bikes are a bit smaller and a bit different. There's a lot of logistics behind the scenes that also need to be discussed as well, because some of them are going to carry some big ramifications for next year going forward, including, are we even going back to Balaton Park at all? Apparently not. We'll have to wait and see on that.
I should have brought a victory cigar on the podcast. Hate this track.
I wouldn't have blamed you, quite frankly. No one was here for Balaton, literally and metaphorically. So places you can find us in the meantime, real quick, we're on YouTube and facebook.com/motorsport101. We're also on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to find our personal handles, you can at DreHarrison101 and at CBuckley917. If you want to get some video highlights of the show as well as on YouTube, you can also follow us on Instagram, motorsport101pod. And our TikTok account, M101_podcast. You can follow us on there. If you want to check us out on our website, we've got full written reviews of all of the weekend's action, a manic triple header between Formula One at the Monaco Grand Prix, MotoGP at Balaton Park, and IndyCar at Gateway, which will be on our next episode. You can check those out as well. And of course, if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they are being recorded, which Jason, Ghost Raptor and Ed, I believe, are doing so right now. Thank you very much for your ongoing support. Don't forget as well, if you want to pay for a full year of supporting the show, you can at a 30% discount. It's basically getting like 12 months for the price of 9 if you are the sort of person that believes in paying upfront for a whole bunch of stuff at once. People like that. So, you know, if you want to do it that way, you very much can. The option is there. Right, without further ado, let's get into our little MotoGP catch-up session. Last time on Dragon Ball Z. God loves a trier, and Pecco Bagnaia tried at the Italian Grand Prix. He hit the front early in the race and tried to rip out the early lead. But Aprilia's Marco Bezzecchi didn't panic, held his nerve, and when Jorge Martin was starting to close in on the pair of them, he pounced to take the lead and didn't look back. Bagnaia's tyres completely faded in the back half of the race, with Martin passing him for second, and then the Ducati rider faded into the clutches of Aiagura, surprise, on the final lap. Agüero tried the lunge at the final corner, but slightly overcooked it. It allowed Man United to hang on to third just barely by 0.04 of a second. Marc Marquez was also back. This was his first race back after that double surgery he had on his shoulder and the broken metatarsal in his foot. He would finish 7th, 10.5 seconds off the win after a very spirited battle with Pedro Acosta. Remember that. It becomes very important almost immediately. So I love that as I say that, Cam is typing that on our set list as we speak. It's quite convenient. Remember that. It becomes important immediately as we head to Ballaton Park. It's worth also mentioning Raul Fernandez won the sprint race in Italy as well. His first sprint win and the first sprint win for Trackhouse. A nice touch, especially given they paid tribute to Kyle Busch on their livery with the number 8 sticker. Nice vibes all around on the Saturday, indeed. As for Ballaton Park, which we've just had this past weekend. So after Marc Marquez played down his chances of a Ballaton win, he decided to take off his belt and beat the field's arse with it. He took pole position on Saturday with a sprint win in the afternoon, blowing Pedro Acosta away and not looking back. It was a slightly different story in the Grand Prix. Hell broke loose at turn one after Jorge Martin missed his braking marker and ploughed into the field. Never seen that one before. Taking himself out, as well as his teammate Marco Bezzecchi, Trackhouse's Raul Fernandez, and Ducati's Fermin Aldeguer, and Fabio Di Giantonio, as Jason quite rightly says in the chat, bowling at the Glen Bike Edition. Everyone was fine, but Martin picked up a double long lap penalty for Bruno for his actions. Acosta was the one elite runner in the front two rows that took a gamble on the soft rear tire. Took the early lead away from Mark and tried to get away. But at roughly half distance, that soft rear was starting to fade. Marquez would start chipping away at the gap. He would start coming back at Acosta. And again, we had another really intense fight. A couple of really borderline pass attempts and defenses from Acosta and Marquez. Great to watch. But in the end, Mark would come through, he would take the lead, he would push that gap out to 2 seconds, and from there he pretty much managed the gap all the way home. He did not look back. Marc Marquez completes a perfect weekend, 37 points in Hungary, his 100th victory across the classes over his storied career since 2010, and the 100th victory for the factory Ducati squad since coming back to Premier Class bike racing in 2002. Pedro Acosta was second for a record-breaking and an unfortunate record. 13th career podium without a win. He's overtaken Colin Edwards in that regard. Pecco Bagnaia was third, 11 seconds off the lead with his third straight podium finish. So after all that, here's the running order. Right in a moment, Marco Bezzecchi has the championship lead. Marc Marquez is 72 points back with 13 weekends left to go, we think, assuming Qatar remains on the calendar in its new October 8th slot. So before we get going, Cam, can you name every single rider that's won a race for that factory Ducati squad since we came back in 02?
Loris Caparossi.
There's 11 in total. Yep, Loris.
Troy.
Loris had seven. The
legendary wild card appearance.
Bayless Valencia 2006.
Davi Stoner, obviously.
Yep.
Pecco.
Yep.
This is like still in the brain fog. Mm-hmm. I'm still in the brain fog here. Obviously, Mark.
Yep. You're at six. It's five more.
Danilo Petrucci got one.
Two.
He got two, didn't he?
Yeah, Italian Grand Prix 2019, then he won at Le Mans in the rain later that same season.
For whatever reason, I always forget Le Mans 2019.
Not the only surprise winner on a factory Ducati at Le Mans. There's a hint.
No, and I know, and I cannot place the name right now. Andre Iannone.
Yeah.
Maniac.
That was their first win in about 6 years at the Red Bull Ring, 2016.
Baggers participant.
Baggers race winner, Andre Iannone. He won race two of the Baggers that weekend in Mugello. He'll be back as well for the rest of the season, so we'll be seeing him at Assen very, very soon.
Jack Miller.
Yep, there you go. Jack Miller, he had three. You're missing two. Both of them had three wins in the factory red.
Nicky never won for them, did he?
No. Unfortunately.
That was his last one with his Honda.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm forgetting one who's really early and one who's much later.
Yeah. One in the teens, another one a bit more recent.
Jorge Lorenzo, that's so obvious. I'm sick of myself that I didn't even think of it.
Lorenzo had three. Oh, you're missing one.
I know I'm missing one.
Good with rear tires.
Kanea Bastianini.
There you go.
Yeah. Forget, he got like... His cup of coffee did involve a win.
Three of them. The full breakdown. Pekka Bagnaia, 31. Most you forget he's got 31 in red. It's a crazy number. Because over half are two men. Bagnaia, 31. Stoner, 23. Dovi, 14. Marquez with 12 after the Spalletton win. Caparossi had 7, including their first one when they came back in 2003 at Catalunya. Yep. Jack Miller had 3. Jerez, Le Mans 2019, I want to say, and then he won in his last season there at Motegi as well. Dominated that one. I don't know where that came from Miller. Lorenzo, he had 3, including that back-to-back pair. I think it was at Le Mans and Catalunya before being told, oh, by the way, you're fired.
Gave him the gas tank he wanted, and he instantly turned into a beast.
And then he was fired. And after firing him, of course. Bastianini had 3 when he was in factory red. Really should have had more, poor guy. Mostly through injury, poor guy. Petrucs, as mentioned, had 2. The famous one at the Mugello at the Italian Grand Prix. One of the most fantastic races you'll ever watch. And are you fucking kidding me? I had a 10 finish on that one. He also won at Le Mans that year. Andrea Iannone, who that was their first win in nearly 6 years when the GP15 finally came good. The 16 variant got Iannone their first win in donkey's years on a track that was pretty much custom built for them. And Troy Bayliss's famous wildcard appearance at Valencia in 2006, where nothing important otherwise happened at that race. No, that is
people in our Discord are like, well, what's the best wildcard performance ever? I'm like it's a win. It's a Troy, win because we actually had an excellent wildcard performance, which we will talk about at Ballantyne. Troy Bayliss showing up and showing the Grand Prix runners how it was done as a World Superbike runner.
You forget as a just reward. How. You forget just how good Troy Bayliss was as a bike rider. Like him,
Man could ride a motorcycle with the best of them.
Oh God, his title fights and battles with Colin Edwards was legendary. Troy Bayliss is an unbelievable bike rider. My God,
Honda basically had to build the RC51 as the anti Bayliss device.
It's like, just stop, enough. He keeps beating us.
It did work.
It would work. Yeah, I mean, it did work in the end, but damn. Anyway, I mean, the first bullet point on the list here, Cam, because this is a bit of a cross variance on the two weekends we're covering here. This is going back and forth between Aprilia and Ducati. I mean, on paper, you go, well, Bez has got a monster lead. Martin's, you know, within a race behind him, you know. But it's easy to forget. Digi has won a Grand Prix already over in Catalunya. Alex Marquez dominated at Jerez. He's done that 2 years in a row now. And now Mark is on the board after dominating Ballotin. And Aprilia were nowhere. I mean, okay, to be fair to Aprilia, they didn't really have very many opportunities in Ballotin's Grand Prix anyway. It was only another late Ayagura comeback to salvage fourth place as a factory. But this is really starting to go back and forth to the point where I'm not sure we know for sure who's got the best bike here.
I think it's really track dependent right now. I mean, they're good at such different things. They're both very good in a straight line now. They're both very good at corner exit. You'd argue the Ducati is better at going onto straights, but the Aprilia is better at getting into the turns. And it really just is, it's a balance of the track. We saw in the Italian Grand Prix that Ducati had the raw lap time to deal with them, but just butchered their rear tire trying to generate that lap time. Pecco, as you said, God loves a trier. And man, Pecco did try, but he did not have his machine under him.
All fairness to Pecco Bagnaia, he rode his nuts off at Mugello. He gave that a... Anyone criticizing him for that one is out of pocket, because that was a real gutsy effort from Pecco, and that was the best he could have possibly done, really.
It's the best he's looked in a hot minute. And conversely, you come to Balaton, which is just kind of a... It's an amazing mixture of dangerous and boring, isn't it? It's just the worst possible track. I can't wait to see this struck from the calendar. What a palate cleanser we get this weekend at Brunoa.
Oh, yeah, next weekend. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's... I'll talk about Balaton going in a little bit later on, but, I mean...
It really is, like, you put Mark on the bike, as mentioned. Italy had some speed, just did not have the stamina to sustain it through a weekend because the muscle in his arm is atrophied because he hasn't really been using it much.
Yeah.
And when he has been able to use it, it was shutting itself off with that nerve injury, with that screw pressing on the radial nerve. But in Mark's own words, he was thrilled. You'll never see him happier with a lower top 10 finish in his life because he got off the bike. He knew exactly why he was fast and why he was slow when he was. And he could write his own notes down after the race, something he's not been able to do since the crash in Indonesia last year.
Yeah, because his hand would visibly shake after a race because of all the trauma that the nerve had been scratching up against. He wasn't able to write his own notes down, which is, well, I imagine quite scary as a human being to not be able to write properly.
I mean,
that would fuck me up.
I'll tell you, someone who... I was not in comparing myself to the sicko that is Mark Marquez. I had a work injury, this was like 9 years ago, where I trapped three nerves in my neck. I couldn't use this arm. I was paralyzed in my right arm for about a month and a half. Thankfully, these days it works pretty much fine. Although if I play basketball, I still have to dribble with my left, which is weird.
It is weird.
But you get this man to 70% in that right arm, and it's like, oh, everything's right as rain.
It's fine, isn't it?
I don't get him.
I don't get him either. I mean, Raptor mentions in our chat, like, and I agree. I mean, I said this when I was hosting Crash's show on my other podcast on YouTube about the state of the field, and I mentioned that Aprilia maybe doesn't have a major weakness at this point off the back of the Italian Grand Prix. I treated that Grand Prix like a kill shot because I thought Ducati were dead and buried after that, and I was wrong.
It looked like it.
I mean, in a vacuum, it looked like it. I mean, even Aprilia took the top speed record that weekend, and no one thought that Aprilia had that in them. Everybody thought KTM might break it because they've been the top speed kings in MotoGP for a little while now. But
not this year, though.
No,
they've been slow in a straight line.
Yeah, because they've given up some of that top speed for downforce to try and get the bike turning a little bit better. 368.6 kilometers an hour Jorge Martin hit down the bottom end of San Donato. For those who...
That's moving.
229.3 miles an hour in Imperial.
You see that and you think, oh, we've gone into Indy 500 time trials from a decade ago.
Yeah.
On a motorcycle!
Its top speed was higher than Stingray Rob's qualifying run at the Indy 500 that same month.
Well, that wasn't very much to write home about, but it was on a motorcycle.
On 150th the contact patch.
Pretty good.
It's pretty crazy. In fact, the entire top five has had to be kind of redone because Diogo Moreira hit 367 in the Grand Prix that it wasn't publicized. He's now second on the all-time list. And there's now a five-way tie for third because Marc Marquez and Iagura hit the old mark of 366.1. That record was already tied. There's now a four-way tie for second between Brad Binder, Paul Espargaro, Iagura, and Marc Marquez because they hit 366.1 in the Grand Prix at certain points. This is all over 227 miles an hour on a motorcycle.
This is the last time we're going to see it as well because with engines getting cut down, and the ride height devices being taken away, might happen early at this rate. Please, please, MSMA, I beg of thee. That's probably it. That's probably not going to budge because the bikes aren't going to be allowed to go that fast anymore.
There's always a chance they'll develop them to that point. I mean, everybody thought the prototypes, when we went off from the 1,000 four-stroke era, we thought that the prototypes were going to be slower, but eventually they caught up and overtook them.
Lap time-wise, certainly, but horsepower-wise, even then, they never got all that close.
But they did beat them for top speed, though, because of the amount of aero and the fact they were smaller and lighter bikes. That enabled them to push past 210 miles an hour without even really thinking about it too much. But you look at Balaton. Jorge Martin admitted it during the weekend. Aprilia might have one weakness, and that is they don't like tracks that are more built to stop-start. You know, tracks that have less flowing corners, more heavier braking zones, like chicane sequences, and more...
Stoppy into the turn and chip the bike in.
Yeah, more like, and I hate to use this term, more street circuit style layouts. Aprilia is weak. They don't like having to just stop, start, and turn. That's a better fit for Ducati, because they like corner entry, and they're very good on the braking most of the time. And it showed because Ducati were a lot quicker, and KTM, specifically in the hands of Pedro Acosta, at least, was right up there. This, if it wasn't for Mark, Pedro Acosta comfortably wins both races.
And this, despite the fact that Pedro Acosta bolted a soft rear tire to a KTM, not the smartest play in the world. I think it was his only play.
It was his own plan.
Was just that fast this weekend. But it did exactly what you think it would do from that sentence. On lap 14, that tire fell off cliff. He and Mark battled to the nines for about three laps. But once Mark definitively got past, he took off up the road.
Yeah, I think you're bang on, and that's exactly what Pedro said after the race. He said straight up that it was the only way he had a chance to beat him, because if it was going to turn into a game of mediums, he was never going to beat Mark straight up. We saw what happened in the sprint when they were on the same compound. You look at the lap times. Laps 2 to 5. Marc Marquez was 1.8 seconds faster than Acosta across those four laps, and the sprint was over right there and then. Like,
yeah, he ended that. He kill shot at that in four laps. I mean, we watched it. Love how Mark described it. Of he put himself in super sport mode, and Lord, did he look like it? Because I mean, from the second lap, the gap is growing. The gap is growing. The soundboard in our Discord server, Zarbon, two or three more. That's what that felt like.
Two or three more.
And then combat sounds and 2 second gap, sprint was over. Pedro tried to dig back into the gap. Anytime he did, Mark had a response and then some.
Mm-hmm.
Mark was throwing in fastest laps later on for fun, just as a don't even try it type of shot.
Exactly. It was just a managed gap after it got to lap five and he had a 2 second lead. I mean, I'll give Acosta this. The man's a fighter. The defense and the counter-attacking he put up to try and defend that position was bullish. He's not afraid of Mark. He will shove it down the inside of him and give as good as he takes.
He stood him up all the way to the edge of the track going onto the main straight trying to keep that position. And next lap, Mark just slightly better judges the same move as the previous lap. returns the favor, and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pedro is humiliating the rest of the KTM contingent.
He's so much quicker than everybody else on that machine right now. Maverick, in his defense, he was the one dude who could keep him honest a year and a half ago, is still recovering from that horrible shoulder injury. He's still not, I don't even know what his 100% looks like either at this point.
I hate to say, much like what we saw with Alex Rins with the leg shattering injury, I wonder if this is just what Maverick is now, because he didn't break his shoulder. He broke the top off of his shoulder.
Right.
It is structurally compromised in perpetuity.
Yeah, it is. As John Cena would say, compromised to a permanent end, unfortunately. And
that sucks for everything that we have said, both praising and criticizing Maverick Viñales, and there is a lot on both sides of that aisle you can say about the man. Vroom, vroom. The man can ride a bike.
And it's just,
he's a shell of himself, and it sucks to watch.
It is, and this is a man, I've said it before, only 24 men in history have won 10 Premier Class MotoGP races, and Mav's the only one to do it with three different manufacturers. You don't fluke that. That's
genuine one of one.
That's a genuine sign of immense talent. And Maverick's always had that in spades. Remember, this is a guy that was winning Moto 3 races at 15. Like Maverick was a beast from the moment he got to Moto 3 to the moment he rides now. He's always been incredible in that regard. And you look at the rest. Enea Bastianini occasionally has a good day, but then he's just as clumsy as he is fast. And Brad Binder is cooked. Like, there's no getting around it.
What has happened to Brad Binder?
I don't know.
He went missing. This is a guy who could get more out of that bike, best of the rest behind the Ducati Onslaught for years on end. And start of last year, it's like someone flipped a switch, and he can't qualify. And even the race pace, which even if he couldn't qualify, he could do some damage in the race. Even that's just fine.
It's like Pedro Acosta got to the factory team and immediately whacked Brad Binder in the back of the head with a steel chair, and he's never been the same since. It's Binder probably won't be back next year if what the rumors are, what we're saying about the way silly season is shaking out to be true. More on that shortly. But the way it's standing now, Cam, Marc Marquez, 100 wins in play over the course of his career. 72 points back with 13 rounds to go. He's still in this fight. There's no doubt about it.
What did we say about Aprilia at the start of the year? We need the sample size. We need some boxes ticked. I now kind of feel that way about the surest thing in all of motorcycle racing.
Yes.
Because we just don't know. Like, elements of Balaton definitely help in that it's an anti-clockwise track. You basically might as well just hand mark the trophy at the start of the weekend. It is what he does. What this does do, and this is not so much the fault of Marco Bezzecchi, Marco needs to keep his shit tucked for the remainder of the year, because he just gave up an okay sprint and a non-existent race, not his fault, to a maximum score on Mark. That will turn into a big problem very quickly.
Bez lost 30 points to Mark this weekend. And this is not a criticism of Bez. It's just the way this weekend played out. Like, again, third was a pretty good sprint result. I'm pretty sure that's Bez's best sprint of the year so far this season to finish third. And the Grand Prix, he was wiped out. And there's no getting around.
Before he was wiped out, like, I think Aprilia, look, he's probably on the podium. I think he's probably ahead of Pecco if he gets to run that race, but I don't think so. Anymore.
Yeah.
And that's not too bad a weekend. Now, that becomes your minimum, because one of your favorite phrases, required run rate.
Mm-hmm.
Marc Marquez's required run rate to the end of the season just got a hell of a lot more manageable.
We're going to have to see
what his health is like. We need to see what the Ducati is like, because, like, the Ducati on one weekend, it looks like the best of the Decimo Sedici Grand Prix, where it just goes out and whacks the field. And the next weekend, it blows the spare tire off.
Yeah.
Got to see more.
I think Mark's got a couple of rounds that I think go in his favor on paper coming up. Bruno, he won there last year pretty comfortably ahead of Acosta. He's
always good at Bruno.
He's always been great at Bruno. Assen could be a coin flip. Bez was very strong there. I mean, that was basically...
Those two beat the shit out of each other last season in Assen. That was a great race.
That was a coin flip. One of the best races of 2025. Sachsenring, Mark's going to be circling that one with red ink on the calendar. You know, this could go back and forth. The next three rounds, I think, are going to be fascinating as to how this title fight might hold up. If Mark can chip away at this, which all he has to do is win right now. Like, if he wins...
He controls his own destiny.
He controls his own destiny because the required run rate, as I always say, is just under six. Win the Grand Prix, win the sprint, you're guaranteed to be above the run rate. So that's all he's got to do. And Mark will only get better as the weeks go by, assuming he doesn't get hurt again, because he's now got a foundation he can work with. And the man more or less admitted after the weekend the reason why he did Mugello was to set himself up for Balaton, because he knew that if his arm was in any way a reasonable state at Balaton, he could win it. And it's exactly what he did. So he took the pain of going to Mugello, which was always going to be a difficult round. Mark has never been a particularly great Mugello rider. Clockwise track, a lot of long flowing right-handers, always been Mark's weakness.
To fight tooth and nail for that win last year with Pecco.
Yeah, it was not. That was not an easy fight. His brother was right there with him the whole way. Pecco was directly involved early on as well. He's never been particularly great in Italy, but... You know, he had to work hard for that win. He's going to have to work hard here, because the main difference compared to last year is that I'm pretty sure we can all comfortably say the Aprilia is a lot better now than it was 12 months ago. That's for damn sure. And Bez is going to be a problem at a few of these tracks.
I think that can be a good thing and a bad thing for Aprilia, though, because they don't have one bullet in the chamber. They have two. Jorge Martin is still in the fight for the title.
Absolutely.
Even if he did fuck up, let's be charitable and call that a fuck up of enormous proportions into turn one.
Let's talk about it. I mean, it's a lot of people were quick to. I mean, there seems to be a trend right now where people in MotoGP are looking at a race starts as potential safety concerns. There was rumored to be a start test on Saturday night at Balaton, and we never actually got it in the end. We've now since had confirmation that from the German Grand Prix onwards, they're going to now spread an extra 2 meters back between rows on the grid to give the bikes more space. And it's not been ratified yet, but it's looking like the whole shock device will be banned from the British Grand Prix after the summer break onwards.
Rest in piss. That is a ripcon one. You grab champagne, you grab your partner of choice, and you celebrate. Fuck the ride height devices, honestly. I believe they will still be allowed to be used in race trim, so it's a half rip bozo, but they won't be used off the line. And the big thing for that, because everyone gets good starts, we talked about this in the past. We talked about that with the last big turn one incident we had.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is pretty much arriving at the same time, unless you're on a Yamaha, into turn one. And at Balaton Park, it is just a rush at an apex on a tight turn.
And that part of the track was resurfaced going into this weekend. And unfortunately, they came there too early because the bitumen during that resurfacing had not stabilized yet.
What Pecco said, it was like being shot by a minigun at certain parts of the track with little bits of asphalt trying to puncture his helmet.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Turn seven, apparently the asphalt was breaking up on that corner as he was following another bike. It's not ideal. So,
bit of a theme in racing last weekend, don't you say?
Definitely. Ask Charles Leclerc about that one.
Just don't blame Brembo. That's your sponsor.
No, because depends on which Ferrari's got which brake pads in the car at the moment. But yes, like, essentially, turn one at Balloton was basically ice, in that it was a unstable, unfinished product that the riders were going into under braking, and everybody was basically told, you're going to have to be very gentle through here. So Jorge Martin, of course, misses his braking point, loses control of the bike, and plows into the middle of the field and wipes out himself and four other dudes. Great!
Yeah, and to be honest, the racing surface off the racing line at Balloton last year was already
sad,
let's say.
Yeah.
Just did it no favors. Jorge Martin, why are you the way that you are? The Bozo Gene cometh.
That's the second time he's done that. It's the second time he's done that in less than a year. And the first time round, he broke his collarbone and that effectively ended his season.
His season had never even really started last year. He was already kind of on the back foot this weekend. Like, Bez definitely had the better of him here. But he lost it so hard, I thought there had to be a reason. Because, like, initially a call out in our Discord was that someone had tapped him. Then I thought he had touched the paint. He was actually already out of shape and endoing on the bike before the pit exit line. He just got it way, way wrong. Knocked out Bez, knocked out Raul Fernandez on three out of four Aprilias out before the first turn. Digi Antonio. It's just junk. A lot of junked motorcycles. And while that does not put Aprilia under any kind of threat in the Constructors of Teams Championship, it ain't ideal.
It's a situation where I think this is more of a politics problem, in that Aprilia's had to handle a lot of shit off the track in the last month or so. We saw what happened in Catalonia between Raul Fernandez and Jorge Martin. Martin was caught up in an incident with Raul. Like, the stewards didn't intervene in that one.
Still don't know how.
Both sides blamed each other on that one. Jorge Martin infamously shoves his manager, Paolo Bonera, on camera when he returns to pit lane. Bonera has to go and talk to MotoGP directly during the Italian Grand Prix weekend and says, it's all about respect. Like, please race each other with respect. Raul Fernandez was allegedly already in trouble because going into Barcelona, he'd already been sat down and said, please do not wipe out the other Aprilias.
Can't believe that has to be formally stated. It feels like that's rule number two in all of racing, is don't hit your teammates.
Yeah, it's why Fernandez is apparently in hot water right now about a potential new contract, because he's a free agent at the end of the year and he might not be kept at Trackhouse for next season. We'll have to wait and see. They got to Italy. They said race to draw of respect. Of course, Italy was an Aprilia's finest hour. 1-2 finish on home soil. Big celebration. This is our house on the pit boards when they celebrated that occasion. Everything's fine and dandy, and then they roll up a Balloton, and then Martin does that.
Yeah, well, like, threat number one, the only thing that's going to get in the way of them clearing out this year
is themselves. You
know, well, just cleaned up a perfect weekend in crushingly dominant form. It's not great. It's almost like it really is like a regen of Formula One last year, where it's like the team that has found themselves with the dominant vehicle and excellent riders to use them doesn't necessarily know how to get the best out of it all the time. And that leaves gaps in their armor. And if Max Verstappen is an unstoppable force trying to run you down, Marc Marquez is that times 10 if he's healthy.
They can't afford too many more weekends like this. And
they can't afford one more. If Marc is healthy, and this is a big ass if, because this is injury comeback, what, number 8 since the ref 2020?
Yeah.
Ox put out a great article on that. Everyone should go read it.
Yeah.
This was the disqualification for plankware, if you will.
Yeah.
You do not want the Mark Marquez streak to the end of the year. You do not want that bearing down on you because you've got two people fighting. Jorge Martin is not going to back down. He has no reason to. He's leaving at the end of the year.
He's going to have to lose. Marco
Bezzecchi has no reason to back down. This is the last year of this regulation set. As McLaren has very fucking emphatically proved this year in Formula One, the next regulation set is not only not guaranteed, there's a better chance that you're going to lose out on it.
Yeah.
A far greater chance. This might be Bez's only crack at a title.
Could be.
And then you have just the monster of the last 12 years of MotoGP bearing down on you from afar on a bike that it seems is starting to get its act together and is improving race to race. Aprilia needs to shut this shit down now.
They definitely need to have a word, because, and look, I credit Massimo Rivola. I think he's done a very, very good job at Aprilia as CEO, because...
House for troubled Italians.
No kidding.
Excellent.
He's developed an Aprilia year on year to the point where it is now a genuine title contender. He's got a team of excellent riders. He's utilized all of his Ferrari F1 know-how from years past. He's had to handle the Jorge Martin contract dispute already, and he handled it exceptionally well, all things considered. Convinced Martin to not go to court. Settled it under the rug, even though Martin would leave the following year, which he couldn't stop from happening anyway. And he's now in the prime position of, you've got both your riders competing for a championship, and Mark is the only threat, but he's a distant one at 72 points back. You couldn't ask for a better scenario than this if you're Aprilia. If, like, you've hit the jackpot here. Massimo Rivola's done an exceptional job at Aprilia. Exceptional. Full credit to him. He deserves all the flowers. This is now your toughest test. You've now got to handle two title contenders that are going to beat the piss out of each other if the opportunity presents itself, and you've got Marc Marquez looking over your shoulder. You are Andrea Stella at McLaren last year with two title threats and Max Verstappen with a better car behind you potentially trying to gun you down. That's what this is. Only now it's on two wheels rather than four. Good luck.
They're going to need it, because if Mark can replicate what he did in Balloton Park, there are some races this year that are going to be a bloodbath.
And it doesn't help that Martin will have to do a double long lap during Brno. That'll take him out of the running entirely.
Well earned.
Yeah. He's lucky it wasn't worse, quite frankly. That would be... I'd be completely okay if that was a pit lane start for next weekend. That's how bad it was. That is completely irresponsible from Martin. You wipe out four riders on the opening corner and you only get a double long lap. They used to throw out race bans for shit like that not too long ago.
he rode in a way. What does Anthony Bourdain say about the Mango Mussolini? I found it personally objectionable, the way he rode that bike.
Sums it up beautifully.
This does set up what at least should be a very interesting season for the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
But not only that, we have information about next year and next year's schedule, and I need to conjure up magically a cigar and a blowtorch. Balloton's dead!
Could you imagine that Hungary did something that you don't see very often anymore in motorsport? They built an entirely brand new racetrack, not even a street course, a proper full-blown regulated road course in open land in a country near a city center as well, because it's not far away from Budapest in Hungary. You put the whole thing together and MotoGP gives up on you after 2 years.
It's almost impressive. Almost.
Like, I've never seen this before, right? And credit to Simon Patterson, who pointed this out. They didn't release attendance figures for this weekend. And I know why. Because I think 2/3 of the seats were fucking empty.
It felt like it. Felt like watching it.
Now, from what I've been told, the previous promotion company for Balaton collapsed right before Viktor Orbán was voted out of power in Hungary as the dickhead that he was in Hungary.
I thought it was right as he was voted out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that was it. That was the catalyst.
Yeah, that company collapsed right around the time Orbán was voted out of power in Hungary. Now the Hungaro Ring, those guys who promote the Formula One race every year, they inherited the rights to promote that Grand Prix. But by that point, it was already way too late to get people through the door because people have already made plans. They've already booked tickets, all of that shit. So
lives. And, you know, like, for better, let's be quite clear. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't shock anyone listening to the show. You all know how we swing politically.
Of course.
It is a major upheaval in that country, and people have more important things to worry about just in their daily lives.
Quite frankly, and as Jason quite rightly says in the Czechs chat right now, you had all that space in that park, and that's the shit you came up with.
Jason's spitting fire right now. Yeah, this track was
awful. What the fuck was this track?
Again, it was an amazing combination of bland and unsafe with an inherently unsafe surface, an inherently unsafe run to turn one, given the nature of the bikes we have now. Runoff in areas that was not long enough. I still remember that KTM that got hurled at a camera stand and hit it.
Yep.
And we got kind of lucky that the cameraman and those cat-like reflexes, he was able to escape injury. What about this venue was good?
Nothing. There was no undulation, so the whole track was as flat as a pancake. You already had to make one adjustment to slow it down because there was fears that the long sweeping left-hander was going to be too fast and not enough runoff and was deemed dangerous. These bikes barely get out of fifth gear on any of the straights in question because they're too fast for the layout. And on top of that, as we saw last year, Pedro Acosta has that huge wreck at turn eight that nearly takes out a cameraman. How do you fuck it up that much when you've got that much space to play with and you can do anything? You can do anything you like with that layout. How are you that bad at this? This is the best you can do.
I don't get it myself. It's like combining every bad trait of tracks that already have raceability problems in modern MotoGP. It's like you took Valencia and took all the personality out of it. And all you're left with is just a flat, blah track. Only Valencia, at least generally, is fit for purpose. This was not fit for purpose on a safety level for a world championship. And I don't think that's a controversial statement.
And they were trying to get FIA grade one status. Which is laughable. Laughable that they were trying to get FIA grade one when they built that shit in 2024. Nonsense. And as Jason quite rightly points out, you've got to look at the economies of what we're doing here, because this is something that not a lot of people talk about when it comes to bike racing and politics and geography in general. They moved the calendar around this year because we've got Brno next in a week and a half's time. Brno is a neighboring country in Central Europe. You look at the landscape of Central Europe for MotoGP right now, you're spoilt for choice. A beautiful city break, because Tuscany is a beautiful part of Italy, you can go to Mugello. If you want a more festival atmosphere, you can go to Germany in the Saxon Ring, which is one of the best promoted rounds on the calendar. Gets 90,000 every year. It's a festival with a Grand Prix that happens to take place inside of it. You want a more historical round, You've got Assen and 100 plus years of history over there with the TT, the museum. Basically
the greatest motorcycle track on earth that isn't Phillip Island.
Yeah, it's cheap. It's got great public transport and accessibility. They have trams going to and from the circuit from Amsterdam. It's a very well-structured and organized race. Brno, always a fan favorite. I've been to Brno.
Love me some Brno.
Wonderful track, brilliant fan base, passionate fans. You want a proper sports football type crowd, you go to Brno. It's in the middle of fucking nowhere, but it produces great racing. You've got all of that layered out across Central Europe. Why the fuck would anyone go to Hungary and Balaton Park?
And it makes it all the more frustrating that they had a blank check and a blank slate to create something with. That, as you mentioned, near Budapest, has good transportation. This has all the ingredients to make something that's accessible and can be turned into something that's festival-like and can be a centerpiece round for MotoGP, and you crap out this venue.
It's like what James May said on Top Gear about the Jaguar XJS. You had the recipe for the perfect shepherd's pie, and then you filled it with dog meat. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And this, like, there was rumblings that they were going to go to the Hungaro Ring next year. Pecco kind of slipped it out on Thursday that they might go to the Hungaro Ring. Turns out that's not the case. Not yet, anyway. Next year, they've confirmed that Aragon will be back in that slot early June. And apparently, it will be the last race we have at Aragon because it's going to be a reserve circuit on the calendar after next year. Another track, unfortunately, that's got attendance issues and the fact it's in the middle of nowhere, that's never helped it. Produces good racing, Aragon, but unfortunately, no one goes. And that's another part of the problem. But Balaton is dead. It deserved to be dead. And I can't believe they fucked up a project this spectacularly, quite frankly, because I saw the pictures. I saw the grandstands. The fact they didn't release an attendance number says it all. It was an embarrassment that so few people would roll up. I think Qatar would get more fans, and they have like one grandstand on their fucking circuit. Jesus Christ.
Along with other events that are ongoing in the Middle East.
No kidding. Good news, kind of. It seems we have a Concorde agreement.
Oh,
probably.
Just like that.
Well, mostly because the manufacturers lost in shocking news.
Hey.
What I would say is expect a rider announcement in the next week or so, because they are now the agreement has not been fully ratified yet, but it's far enough along where apparently they've been given the green light to announce rider moves. They've still got to iron out a few minor details here and there, but the core framework of the agreement is now apparently in place. Supposedly, the manufacturer's push for a revenue sharing model ultimately failed. Instead, they'll all get an extra $1 million a year as a direct payment from the series itself. I think it's going to go up to like $8 million a year as opposed to $7 million. And in exchange, they've also been told, you need to be able to take more VIPs. So improve your hospitality and improve your marketing departments, basically, is what they've had to tell them. Very limited.
Working on the show.
Yep.
Very, very, very modern Formula One of them.
It's very liberty. They want more VIPs in the paddock. They want increased marketing. They want the show to be the priority. Whatever, man. I mean,
they're cool. We fought this hard for this long with the manufacturers for this. Cool.
I think it's pathetic how weak the manufacturers are in this. Every other major sport has a collective bargaining agreement that entitles them to a significant portion of the amount the sport makes. And rightly so. It's a fair deal for them putting it all on the line to be able to participate in a sport in the first place. Most American sports, let's not forget, MotoGP is now American-owned by Liberty Media. They know full well that almost every sport has a collective CBA. And it's around 50-50. And yep. The manufacturers caved because Ducati and allegedly Honda were okay with just sucking it up.
Well, they're the two who basically have a blank check to operate however they want. So
I found out the other day that Ducati sell enough Panigales per year to fund their entire program.
It's the best leader bike in the world. Like, they unlike pretty much anyone else in that space, have been able to make ultra high performance motorcycles still a viable business model in the big 26 and in the past half decade or so. It's something Honda doesn't do. The fire blade's rotting in more mm-hmm. ways than one. It's been 10 years since they won a world superbike race.
Yeah. Nicky Hayden, 2016. It's been a decade and they haven't won a world superbike race.
Old man Honda would be throwing wrenches at people's heads until they fix it.
Get your shit together.
Yeah, what? Like the R1 is a zombie. The BMW 1000, fair enough, BMW pushes theirs, and it is a popular choice. But also, they just lost their talisman rider in World Superbike.
They haven't got the talent
department.
They haven't got the talent to back up a decent bike because Toprak's now gone.
Yeah, Ducati has genuinely turned win on Sunday to sell on Monday for that form of bike. And it means that they more or less can just almost operate with impunity within the Volkswagen group to kind of just do what they want. And that means that they can produce those incredible bikes on the road and done tons of research into the crazy shit that they've done to MotoGP.
Yeah.
Honda just is Honda and has an infinite well of cash to pull from. You know, they only just turned an operating loss for the first time ever.
Just deeply unfortunate that I find it unfortunate that, yes, Ducati and Honda can do whatever the hell they want, but they failed to see the bigger picture in all of this, in that a collective CBA would make them healthier, it would make them more money, and it would actually more likely encourage more participation in the future for not just themselves, but for other factories, for more participation in general. And it would be a healthier sport if they were all on a CBA. Because this will happen again. The can will get kicked down the road, and in 5 years' time, we're going to have this conversation again in 2031 when we're talking about the next collective bargaining agreement and the fact that the teams are giving up way too much. This is like the UFC. The UFC pays their fighters 12% of their revenue. It's a fucking joke.
Dre, you're absolutely right. But what did you say about Andretti joining Formula One all those years ago? Why would the turkeys vote for Thanksgiving?
The selfish bastards that are only thinking about themselves and protecting. They're defensive. They want to protect their slice of the pie without realizing there's a possibility of a bigger pie if you're prepared to share it. And unfortunately,
that IndyCar, it's the way everyone's trending is becoming very trying to insulate from the outside rather than trying to grow.
And you know what the sad thing about that is? There is an entity overlooking all of this that wants into MotoGP in the not-too-distant future, and they might actually have difficulty getting in under this model. It's the Chinese. The Chinese, CF Moto, BYD, they are all eyeing up motorsport as a way of selling themselves because they are dominating in China in their own backyard right now. CF Moto made $1.6 billion last year in revenue. Like, they've got
money. A lot of Xboxes.
They've got money, and they're now starting to put a footprint down in Europe. They're now starting to sell in Italy. They've got bases in the UK. The cars are doing wonderfully over there right now. The UK, people are flocking to buy electric cars from them because they realize, hey, okay, they're a brand we don't know, but they make good quality cars. They feel nice to drive. We'll buy them. startling concept.
And a good product, and people are actually interested in it. What a concept.
Yeah, and they can undercut the rest of their European rivals by 10 grand. It's the same principle. It's this is the opportunity that could pass them by if they want to keep acting selfishly about this in the grand scheme of things. Although, they're not getting it all their own way, because they are not happy about one of the other major rules that's coming into 2027. We're going to one bike in the garage on Fridays. Now, that's going to be interesting. For those who don't fully understand what's happening here, typically, in a MotoGP weekend, as you'll see in the garage, there'll be two bikes laid out. There's always a spare, just in case. In case there's a crash, in case there's a technical problem or whatever it is, there's a second bike that's ready to go, it's quick to prep, and they can get the rider back out there on track within a matter of minutes in the right scenario, basically. That's now going away from next year. They're going to keep that second bike ready for Saturday and Sunday to keep the prospect of a flag-to-flag race on the table. Mm-hmm. But on a Friday, there will only be one bike in the garage, and there'll have to be significant damage on the first bike for them to have permission to wheel the second bike out of the garage of all the spare parts to set it up. It was a factory idea to try and save costs and save operating costs, mostly because it means less mileage on the prototype parts. So if they can last longer, it's cheaper than have to make so many, etc., etc. The problem now is that if you crash once in a practice session, you're done on Friday.
Yep.
You're in Q1.
Yeah, it's the same thing as when F1 bans spare cars and you suddenly did not have an option if you wiped out your primary. It's a decision. I don't really know what I think of it yet.
I think it's stupid.
I'm trending towards it's stupid because
I don't get it.
Just the nature of motorcycle racing more so than car racing. Like, if you crash a car, there's a very good chance you might be able to get it back. If you crash a bike and it's stalled out, you're done for the day. I think that's a bit much.
I was going to say, it also means you can't develop parts as quickly, because you're only gonna get less mileage to test parts out. It's gonna take you time to get your data together. I think it's
taking away opportunities for experimentation.
I just don't see. I mean, okay, you're saving money in the long run, right? The factories reckon it's gonna save about $1 million to $1.5 million over the course of a year. Fine, but I don't understand. I mean, you're combining that of apparently they want to push for shorter practice sessions, which is weird because we've got bigger practice sessions than we've ever had now, because they've compressed Moto 3 and Moto 2 down so that we now get a 1 hour timed practice on Friday afternoon and then 30 minute warm up sessions when Moto 2 and Moto 3 don't get a warm up anymore. It's weird. The whole thing doesn't make much sense to me.
It's like the whole weekend format is like a moving target because they're trying to prioritize the main show so much now.
And meaningful action.
And with the sprint. And I mean, the easy one for me is kill the sprint, but they're never going to do that. And the sprint is kind of just screwed up the rest of the weekend format.
Everybody has complained that the weekend format is now too intense because you get the one free practice one at the start of the weekend and then you're straight into a timed practice where everything matters. You've got to make the top 10. It's a glorified qualifying session on Friday now, and then it doesn't let up. Qualifying on Saturday morning, sprint race in the afternoon, and then all in for the Grand Prix on Sunday. I know team bosses have complained that this format is too intense. And then you want to shorten the practice sessions with one bike and increase the jeopardy? What? Are you crazy?
I think that's exactly what they're trying to do.
I don't get it. This is like the turkey deciding to vote for Christmas and then sticking itself in the oven. I just don't understand. Like, what do you gain from? Are you that desperate to save £1 million that you'll increase your jeopardy even more in doing so? I just find that bizarre.
I don't get it either myself.
I don't get it. I don't get it. But that's MotoGP for you. It's a weird place right now. We've got no wild cards next year. We're going to have one bike in the garage. We're probably going to have official reserves. We've got Cal Crutchlow back. Apparently, he's getting two more rounds. We didn't even mention him as well. Shout out to Ike the Quota. Brilliant performance in P8.
Was fantastic. Phenomenal.
Well done, young fella.
Nice.
Feel bad for him. That man's had 14 straight second places in World Superbikes this year.
He's never winning one. Nicolò Bulaga is on course for the perfect season. He just won't let go.
Yeah, best wildcard performance is Taka Nakagami at France last year. Brilliant ride from Michael Aquina. Real talented goddamn bike rider that never really got a fair shake in MotoGP. And I'm glad he came back and he got a stand innovation from the Gresini garage when he got back. And rightly so. He was magnificent.
I hope, well, like, after a win, that was the drunkest place on earth. Because he absolutely deserved that. Great ride. We were so close, Dre. We were so close to top 10 rack.
Oh, 11th. So close. So close.
Great ride this weekend.
I love as well that Digia got wiped out on lap one, came back, got 2 points, and beat Franco Morbidelli. Get Morbidelli the fuck out of here. That boy is cooked. Cooked!
No, he is beyond cooked. He is the crumb at the bottom of the air fryer that never gets cleaned out at this stage.
We were one spot away from Cal Crutchlow getting a point in P16.
That kind of says it all. Next time on Motorsport 101.
Next time on Motorsport 101, IndyCar from Gateway. The bikes are back at Brno in a week and a half's time for the Czechia Grand Prix. Going to be a fun one. We love Brno. Very exciting. One of our favorite rounds on the calendar. Can't wait for that. This title fight just got a hell of a lot more interesting. That's for damn sure. We just do not know what twists and turns 2026 is going to go through next. Let's talk about Gateway next time out. We'll see you next time. I've been Dre Harris and he's been Cameron Barkley. Thank you very much for watching and listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Dre. Our bikes.
Not 6'7", 7'11".